are the tales of America. These are the voices of the land, belonging to Americans who believed in doing things. Their achievements became the legend of the land, to sing about and tell about and pass on down to other generations. The people we tell about helped make us what we are today, gave us the drive and the push. So here's to the American legend, the Fireside Tales.
And now we present Old Stormalong, Deepwater Sailor Man.
Say, do you remember Old Stormalong, the legendary Deepwater Sailor Man?
Certainly I remember Old Stormalong. Take a lot of doing to forget the greatest sailorman ever. I was with him on the Lady of the Sea, the first ship he ever did sail. I was standing right there when the skipper says to him...
And who be this sea giant?
Alfred Fulltop Stormalong, Captain.
ABS. Able-bodied sailor. How tall be ye?
Just 4 fathoms from the deck to the bridge of Manoa.
By your size and strength, they should measure the talents of all other seamen.
Stormalong was not only a sailorman for all waters, but he was a whaler, too. Now, mind the time the Lady of the Sea was anchored in the middle of the North Atlantic. The lookout sights a school off to the eastward, and Stormy, the bosun now, gives the order.
Hoist the mudhole! By the north end, an octopus is wrapped all around that mudhole, holding the anchor with half of his tentacles and with the other half hanging onto the seaweed at the bottom.
The mate yelled,
"Fast, Kittyman!"
and went back to tell the skipper. But when the old man come forward, he was just in time to see Stormy taking a deep breath, take his sheath knife in his teeth, and hurl himself overboard. Was sure our bosun had been tore apart by the octopus. It was a quarter of an hour. Stormy's wind couldn't have held out much longer when suddenly there was a calm and Stormy's head come to the surface.
Throw him a line!
But Stormy didn't wait. He grabbed the anchor chain and come hand over hand to the deck.
All right! All hands lean on it and bring it home!
All hands! What'd you do with the octopus?
Just tied his arm in knots. Anchor knots. It'll take him a month of Sundays to untie him.
Stormalong was as loyal to his ship as any sailorman until he saw a bigger one. And the Lady of the Sea was the biggest ship sailing the Atlantic. At least we thought she was. But just before we got to Barnegat, we came across what first appeared to be a mirage. Stormy was at the other rail, gazing at the biggest ship ever in goggle-eyed admiration.
Must take a million ordinary sailors to man her. Yes, sir. 1 million at least. Well, I guess I'll be leaving this packet.
And a minute later, Stormy was overboard, swimming the Atlantic, swimming to the big ship, and the Lady of the Sea was without a bosun. After we discharged our cargo in Boston, I signed on the courser. It was none other than the big ship we'd seen a few weeks before, the one Stormy had gone over the side for. The first thing that caught my eye as my feet hit the deck was a stable full of horses. I said, "Horse boat, huh?" And then...
"Horse boat, nothing."
"Stormalong! Well, figured is how I'd see you here."
"This is the ship for me, built for a man who's 4 fathoms tall from deck to bridge.
Sure a big ship.
Big? Ha! That's what the horses are for. All the officers and men on watch are mounted on horses so they can cover their territory. Man alive, her rigging so big, no living man can take her in at a single glance. Her masts go into the clouds, and the top sections are on hinges, so they can be bent over to let the sun and moon pass. Yes, sir, matey, she's a big ship.
Stormy was right. A big ship and a fine ship. There never was a storm great enough to cause her any real discomfort. But there was one thing caused us a bit of worry. That morning, the bosun put his mouth to his megaphone and shouted,
"Rise and shine for the Blackfall Line!"
And there was Storm along at the wheel, holding her true to what he thought was her course. The captain told us we were somewhere in the North Sea and headed south. That meant trouble. The Corsair could never get through the English Channel.
We could try turning her around.
Aye, but if we do, we're bound to knock off a bit of Scotland and Norway.
And we'll make mud pies out of the Shetland Islands.
You're both right. Even if we miss Scotland, the tidal wave would cause to get her anyway. Seems as hard as nothing we can do, except let Stormy try and get her through the Channel.
Just as we got to the point between Calais and the cliffs of Dover, the skipper looked back at Stormy and saw that the man at the wheel was calm and steady. The skipper yelled to Stormy through his megaphone.
We'll see make it!
Aye, Captain, I think so. Better send all hands over and soap the sides. Put an extra heavy coat on the starboard.
And 550 men were sent over to cover every inch of her hull with the finest soap money could buy. Soon the Corsair was a gleaming, slippery white from stem to stern, and all hands was ready as the Corsair entered the channel. Our eyes was all on Stormy. It was up to him now. He was at the wheel, and the only man who could get us through. The ship lurched, and then she began to ease through just as sweet as honey. And it was all due to the soap that we got through it all. It was such a tight fit, though, that every bit of soap was scraped off the starboard side. Ever since then, those cliffs have been pure white. And they call them the White Cliffs of Dover. The Corsair kept right on going. But after a few hours, we got into shallow water. And we had to jettison all of our ballast. We threw so much overboard that you can still see the piles of dirt. The English call them the Channel Islands.
Mr. Stormalong!
Aye, Captain!
Westward watch! Islands!
They had better watch us, Captain!
It was a September gale that gave the Corsair her most terrifying moments. She was down among the Caribbees, and the storm whipped her about pretty badly. The skipper warned as much afraid of losing his ship as he was of hitting one of the islands and knocking it and the inhabitants into kingdom come. Then the Corsair headed west by south like a bronco with the bit in his teeth. Right down the gulf she went until she come to Panama.
Land ahead!
There it is, Captain!
We're going to hit her, Mr. Swabalon!
Aye, sir!
Great tragedy. It should have been the greatest disaster the world had ever known. But by my whale's tooth, it was none of those. The Corsair slid across the shores of Darien, tore through the whole isthmus, and found herself out in the Pacific Ocean, drifting in a calm. The only eyewitnesses of the destruction outside the crew was some army people who'd been sent down by the United States to make surveys for a canal. And like one of them said,
and right in front of our very eyes, this ship, bigger than the storm itself,
came roaring out of the Caribbean through the isthmus and dug the canal for us.
And another one?
It was quite interesting. The army, of course, anticipated this event. And now that the ditch is dug, we will finish the Panama Canal in quick order.
Of course, the truth of the matter is that old Stormalong and the Corsair dug that ditch and practically built the Panama Canal single-handed. But old Stormy wasn't one to brag. He let the army take the credit. Well, skippers come and skippers went, but Stormy stuck to the Corsair to the end. And what an end it was. We was calmed in the South Atlantic. Not a breeze for days and supplies running low. Stormy, the captain, and me was talking about what we'd do.
Men are getting hungry. Weighed up every fish in the ocean and trapped every bird in the sky. Nothing left to do but reach land somehow.
I wonder if there's any wind way up.
Wouldn't know. Both topsails were destroyed in the last storm.
I could go up and fix them.
But Stormy, it's a long climb. The young men who've reached the top have come down with long gray beards.
Well, if anybody can do it, Stormy can.
Aye, Captain.
All right, Stormy, the topsail is yours.
Stormy begun immediately. He took 1,000 yards of line, twirled around one finger, a kit of tools strapped to his back, and a captured pilot whale under his belt to feed him while he was aloft. Then he braced himself on the top deck, crouched on his knees, drew a deep breath, and shot himself upwards through a low cloud, past the hinges that bent so the sun and moon could pass, and finally become just a pinpoint that fell on one of them top riggings. Some of the crew said they saw him take another leap before he was completely out of sight, but there's none who'll swear to it. And Stormy himself, he never come back to prove their story. By nightfall, the Corsair was moving again. We knew Stormy must have fixed the topsail, because there was still a calm at sea level. And what really happened to Stormy? Well, nobody knows for sure. But being as close as I was to him, I could take a guess. Only a few minutes before the Corsair started moving again, the moon come up out of the ocean. It was cloudy overhead, so we soon lost sight of it. But by careful calculation, I figure it happened like this.
There you are, Topsail! All fixed! And now, you winds, blow! Blow the Corsair home! Blow, you winds!
And just as the ship started to move, Stormy, who was over the clouds, saw what we couldn't see. The moon was heading straight for our main rigging.
The moon? It's going to hit the rigging. And the captain won't bend her at the hinges. He can't see the moon. Our rigging will be ruined. We'll never get home unless I help steer her clear.
And with that thought, Stormy again braced himself. Only on the very top rigging this time. And as the moon was about to hit it, he reached out, grabbed 2 craters on the moon, and shoved with all his might. He shoved and pushed, and then took one final mighty breath, and gave the mightiest shove that was in him. It worked. The moon just missed our top rigging and the Corsair was headed home. But Stormy, well, I figure that when he grabbed hold of the moon, his giant hands got stuck in one of those craters. He couldn't get them out fast enough. And by the time he did, the Corsair was 100 miles away and Stormy was left by himself, sitting on the moon. Yes, sir. None of us old-timers ever forgets old Stormalong. Every time the moon is full, we sort of look up and wink at it. Because we know, sure as iron men used to sail wooden ships, that old Stormalong is the man in the moon who keeps looking down at this earth, waiting for the day that another ship like the Corsair will sail by, so he'll be able to grab the brigand and eat his fill of shark meat and whale soup once again.
You've been listening to Old Stormalong, Deepwater Sailor Man, another American legend written by Robert M. Young, produced and directed by James W. Talbot. Lou Merrill was Stormalong, and Joe Duval was the old skipper. Others in the cast were Rye Billsbury, Tom McKee, Clayton Post, and John Stevenson. Original music was composed by John Hicks, with the orchestra under the direction of Michel Perrier. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.